of it is through their presentation of music, but they're outside the cult in that they are not people who are really initiated and fully participating in it. So we have kind of an outside mediating group of people who stand between the horses and the last category, which is the gods. As you know, it's a three-part division. Like everything in the Western world, it has three parts, like stoplights and get ready, get set, go. This is the way I look at it. Now these gods are the possessing spirits. And the horses are the things or the people that they possess. The musicians kind of stand between these two groups. Now, let me give you some idea of where we're going to go. The city of Kano in northern Nigeria is something you may have heard about in some of your courses. It is used to be a city-state in the western Sudan, has a wall around it. It's in a particular ecological zone, kind of savanna grassland. They practice dry field farming for the most part, but they do have some irrigation. And there's a kind of a short growing season, and that requires that in order to subsist in this kind of a climate, you have to create or produce a surplus. And in the surplus, as you know, if you're a cultural materialist, has to be distributed by some kind of an agent. That agent is either a big man like New Guinea or Melanesia, or it's a chiefdom as Polynesia or West Africa. So we're looking at city-state, which has a long past, a long, that is, cultural past, when people look back on their roots and kind of understand who they are. For a long time in that past, they were not Muslims. Until about the 15th century, these people were non-Muslims, and some people say that what they did was part of this. And Greenberg has written a little monograph called Isco Ki Cult, that's kind of spirit cult. Bori is really only one part of that spirit cult. It is the possession part of that cult. And today in Kano, despite the fact that Islam has been very strong and the British have come in and the independence has taken over and various other people have tried to stamp out animism, as it's called, or it's maybe not that, part of this Isco Ki or spirit cult persists, and that is the thing that has to do with Bori. And we might ask ourselves why it is able to exist like that. I think it exists because it has to do with health and interpretation of illness. Okay, who are the cult? Who are the horses? Who are the horses? The horses are such people as, well, we've got musicians can be ex-horses. If you know anything about musicians in the Western Sudan, perhaps in other parts of the world as well, you know that they are a depressed category of individuals. Musicians are lonely people. Put it this way, nobody would want their daughter to marry a musician. They're just bad people. There are another kind of people, and this is the one, the group that's frequently talked about as being the most significant group that participates, and that is prostitutes. Prostitutes are people who are, they're women who are previously married, now divorced, and they choose to be single. We would call them liberated. But in Nigeria, they're called prostitutes. Now, that's a general term for both active and non-active independent women. So they have that other, that next category, prostitutes. There's still another category. Let's go on to the man side. There's a category of men who have decided that they really don't like women like other men like women, and they rather like themselves better, and they are homosexuals or in the same kind of category. They are transvestites. And they're not total female impersonators. They're rather people who wear kind of effeminate clothes. The sleeves are too long, the trousers are too baggy, and they walk like this, and their voices are very high. So we've got that group in there. Now there's still another group, night soil workers, and other people like butchers, and people who have kind of unclean occupations. And lastly, people who are simply crazy. They are. You know, the society has decided that they give off improper cues, or they interpret cues that other people give off improperly. And that, as you know, is crazy. You know, somebody who laughs and there's nothing funny, that's a nut. All of those people are drawn to this kind of an activity in Bori, and you may say that this is just kind of a cult of deviance, and indeed that's one way of looking at it, it's a cult of deviance. The other way of looking at it is deviance that is filled with deviance, and they practice deviance. It's hard in English to say the difference. They are drawn into this through affliction. The affliction is either being a person who has made the wrong kinds of choices in his life, like a man, or a person like a woman who has decided that her wrong choice is going to be apart from man, as in she's refused to be a ward of a man, but on the other hand, she's forced to be a ward of a man because the society says she must do so. And what Bori will do is to allow her to be independent while having a nominal head who is male. And there will be a ritual that will remove her from her own compound, her own family, and her guardian, and place her in the authority of a curer. She can be an outpatient for the rest of her life if she likes. And she lives in this person's compound and regularly goes through this cure. But in fact, this guy is the head of a brothel. Or it could be a woman that's the head of the brothel. And then she's simply doing her own thing. So it's a cult of the formerly afflicted for the currently afflicted. In other words, the only way you can get into it is by being branded in some way or another as being weird. Okay, musicians are the people who control all of the rituals in this thing. They are people who keep all of the oral material in their head. They know all of the spirits, they know all of the relationships, they know most of the remedies, although horses themselves, that is other cult leaders, will generally lead initiations. Musicians are people who tell them what they should do and what kind of things to collect, and maintain an elaborate body of information about the gods. Now, who are the gods? The gods are, if you look at the gods, there are hundreds of them, there are thousands of them. And each one of them has a particular name. Each one of them has some kind of an identity that involves personality or behavior or kind of clothing or trees or bark or roots that are associated with, and as well as illness. It's, you know, they cause specific kinds of illnesses. So if you are a leper, for example, this is a rather difficult illness to cure by psychosomatic means, but suppose you are a leper, you have a number of choices. One, you can go to a Western clinic where there is some kind of a doctor or leprosarium, and they will treat you, and your illness will go into a state of remission, and then you're quote cured, or not cured, but it's healed. Now, suppose that you participate a little bit in this leprosarium, and you, for some reason or other, the cure is not fast enough, or you decide to abandon it. At that point, you may go to a malam, who will say, "Well, what you really have is you need some special help from the Quran. You'll write some things on it, on a board, and you wash it into a cup, and then you drink it, and that will get the power right into your inside." Now, another thing you can see, you give up all these people, and you'll say, "Well, it really has to do with a spirit, because everybody knows that leprosy is caused by a spirit called Kuturu, the leper." I like the name because it's kind of a descriptive title. And but one of the best people that I've ever seen at all in this cult was a cured leper, and the transformation that he underwent when he went into a state of trance was just remarkable. Okay. In any case, if you say that it's caused by this spirit, then what they'll do is they'll bring you into a situation in which the musicians and other cult people will be there to gather certain kinds of remedies, and then they will, you see, you have to be cured, right? But curing is, you know, there's another side to that coin, and that is initiation. See, everything is spoken of in terms of a cure, but in fact what they're talking about is moving you from one state or one status to another status. That's a cult member. And as the things are progressing, they sit you down. This is the normal curing process. They sit you down with your legs outstretched and you're sitting up vertically. And they fasten your thumbs together like this, and they fasten your toes together like that. And then they cover you totally with a white blanket and then tuck it all in. Now, if you know anything about altered states of consciousness, you'll see that immediately there's some things that are going to happen. If you are, try it when you go home tonight. Sit down on your bed and sit very quiet like this and put your blanket over your head. And I guarantee within 5 minutes you will see things that you have never seen before. And you will, you'll want to come out from underneath the blanket. But you might try it just to experience. It also helps you've got loud music going in the background. I mean, kind of real hard rock kind of stuff. You will begin to feel certain kinds of sensations lifting
perhaps seeing things and the like. And what's happening is that you are raising the level of carbon dioxide in your own blood, and that is one of the things, one of the physical things that's associated with an altered state. Not necessarily raising the level of carbon dioxide, but doing something with the level. You can either decrease it or you can raise it. And since most people don't like exercise, they can't decrease it. You know, what you're supposed to do is hyperventilate. That will decrease the level of carbon dioxide. Now, while all this is going on, these people are, these kind of outside candidates, are actually, you know, they're being cured, right? But on the other hand, they believe and they feel the power of the spirit. I mean, most of you here don't believe in anything like spirits. But if you do what I told you, you go home tonight and put that blanket on, you will know that there are spirits, because you will start feeling yourself, and you may start to quiver a little bit, and other things might start to happen to you that may scare you, and you'll say, hey, you know, what is all of this? Well, person's illness is described as being caused by one spirit or another. Now, everybody on the outside knows what spirit it is that's causing the illness. You know how they know that? All the spirits have illnesses connected with their identities. So it's easy. If a person is exhibiting one kind of behavior or another, they know what spirit has caused it. So they just call that spirit with the music, and the guy gets under close to the banquet, and he looks inside, and he says, will you sit at peace on this person's neck? And the spirit will say, oh, yes, you know, whatever it is. And then the guy will come out and say, oh, that spirit will be okay. So then what you have to do is they keep intensifying the cure, that is the initiation. And the person, as he enters deeper and deeper into these states of trance, is taught various kinds of movements and gestures of things that he must know while in a state of trance. Because one of the cross-cultural studies that was done by, Felicitas Goodman, you remember her? She just gave a paper which described the experimental approach in altered states of consciousness when various people were put in altered states of consciousness or asked to describe their feelings. And most of them said, you know, we did this and we did that. And they said, but we were at a loss as to what to do next. Now, that loss is a cultural content, the background of behavior that is supposed to come out while a person is in trance. So they're continually feeding this information in onto a person. And at that point, he is absorbing it and absorbing it. Finally, when initiation, cure, or initiation is all over, he will come out into a field of other people who are already made it, who have already made it. And at that point, the music will start up and everything will start. And this person must demonstrate using the same kinds of techniques that he was taught in initiation. And it works. It really does. And some really phenomenal things can happen. I don't know if any of you have been into faith healing or anything like that, but, you know, a lot of things can happen when people put their minds to it. And since a lot of the illnesses that we're talking about in this whole thing are psychosomatic anyway, you can see that the results can be pretty dramatic. And that is the reason that it continues. That is why Islam, that is why federal government, state government, colonial government could not stamp it out, because it works. You know, people are not stupid. If things don't work, they abandon them. But when they work, they keep them on. Now, since I've given you that third, let me give you a few slides. Oh yeah, the slides are, let me have somebody on the light. The slides are going to be just kind of a quick visual ethnography of the area. I'm going to stand back here because I feel safer standing next to the machine. I told you it's a walled city. These are two Fulani women who are on their way to market, entering the city through a gate, which still exists. It's still in pretty good repair. This is you get an idea of how much dirt was used to create the wall. This is a picture taken from the top of the wall. And the kids down there in the dry season are bathing in a large hole that is a result of excavation. Not only dirt for the wall, but dirt for the houses. The main gate, now torn down, Kohor Nasarawa, the gate of victory. Charles Kraft would say it's something else. I don't agree. This is a small, the wall is about 18 miles long, and it encompasses an area which is about a third urban and two-thirds rural, that is farming. And this is one of the small villages on the outside supporting a community of agriculturalists. This is looking inside of the city. We see here a totally defensible city that can withstand a 3 or 4 month siege. That's dry season, here's wet season, the same place. Now you get an idea of what you have to do during the wet season in order to reap the harvest to keep you going over the dry season.
That's the urban section. This picture was taken 1 year earlier. Notice that kind of curved partial wall in the left front. Then this picture, this is taken 1 year after the other one. You notice what is happening. A lot of tin roofs are appearing. It's really the same place, but a year later. A small example of northern Nigerian architecture. It looks very Islamic. Ubiquitous Coca-Cola. Everybody wants Coca-Cola. Somebody ought to do an archaeological study of Coca-Cola bottles. That's the post office. I want you to look at this sign. Warning, this place has been specially treated against urinating. We do not accept any responsibility. After the session is over, you can tell me what that means. I don't know. Drink 3 rings now. It'll make your head feel well. Smoking. A small mosque. The Hausa are 99.9% Muslims. By the way, even the people involved in the Bori cult call themselves Muslims. It's just that they know that there are other powers between them and Allah that are really active. They don't deny the existence of Allah, but they simply say that there are these other forces to be reckoned with. Here's a small mosque in the kind of the farming section of the town in which passerbys may pray. The large mosque, and there in the foreground, the Muslim system of burial, that is a simple grave with a piece of broken pottery. That is an eroding graveyard in the foreground. Another shot of the mosque. The dye pits, craft specialization. That is an example of the blue cloth that comes out of the dye pit after it has been pounded, worn by a turban, and is in here in this kind of a situation. It is the mark of a royal slave, a man who is extremely wealthy and powerful, but is whose status is nonetheless as a slave. He wouldn't, by the way, give that up for anything. To be free would be to be poor. Another slave. You know, doesn't exactly fit most of your ideas of what a slave ought to look like, but there he is. A small bit of irrigation goes on. This is kind of a truck farming vegetable operation here, and you'll recognize the Middle Eastern, the along the Nile, specifically the Shadouf. Corn cellar, standard West African measure there, a bowl called a mudu. Pounding it. Meatsicles is what I call them. They're around a fire. The kebabs, I guess you call them. Pieces of meat that are dipped in pepper and then roasted by those two guys on the side there. We'll just turn them around and make them nicely roasted. Boy, that's a very cheap way of eating. You can tell a house not by the number of, the opulence of a house, not by the number of bathrooms. You know, in the United States, it's how many bathrooms does the house have. That's how you know how good the house is. It's here in northern Nigeria, it's not how many bathrooms, but rather, what is the height of the entry hut? Well, there is a fairly high entry hut. The man must be fairly wealthy and influential. There's another picture. He is indeed the emir, the king. Let's go to Islam for a moment. This is the beginning of the Muslim festival, Small Salah. Might say, the most important festival occurs after the month of Ramadan, and it begins by this man in the center wearing white, whapping that drum, which is a royal drum, and that signals to other musicians in the area that they are supposed to begin blowing in the general din of things. Here's some drummers, after which time people on the outside, the masubindiga, people with guns, will fire these blunderbusses, Dane guns off, and that signals the rest of the town that the next day is to be the parade. There's the gathering of the people, all of the people who count for anything, that is men, are there. The women do not come to this particular ground. This is the prayer field. There they are. Just to help you out a little bit to see what it's like. There you go. There's the emir praying. The man who is seated to the right of the picture wearing yellow hat, is one of the 12 most, used to be, one of the 12 most powerful men, I say that, used to be, one of the 12 most powerful men in Nigeria. Is the governor of Kano State. He has a problem. He's not praying in the right way. He's now deposed. No connection, but maybe so. There's the emir writing. Part of this is to give you an idea of the ceremony and the pageantry that accompanies the movement of the emir during the Salah festival. This is a person who constitutionally has very little political power. He's merely the chairman of local government council. But you have some idea of the amount of people that he gathers in the pageantry, of his influence. Tremendous influence. Nothing happens except that he says it's all right. If the emir were to oppose anything, it would be dead. Now, obviously, he's not a dummy. He's not going to oppose things that are going to be very popular and surefire things. But on the other hand, if you have anything which is kind of touchy, you must make sure you have his approval. Horses. Those of you who won't be able to get to the lecture tomorrow, part of the symbolism of horses is that you decorate real horses for parades, and you do certain kinds of things to make them misbehave and generally prance around. That's precisely the same kind of thing that happens during possession ceremonies when the people who are horses are decorated and do certain kinds of things to make them prance around. Horses are horses. The man there in the elegant red, any guesses as to who? What kind of person? A professional receiver. A person who collects gifts from people who have to give gifts. To demonstrate generosity, not to each other, because that would result in accumulation of wealth, but rather to some third neutral party who can witness and receive. There he is, he's a musician. He's wearing probably 4 years' annual salary on his back, none of which he paid for. It was all given to him. That gown, that cape that he's wearing, it represents about 1 year's annual income. It's that expensive for him. But he was given to him, you know. The old and the new. Praise singers. I have a subsequent picture to this of this same guy. This picture is taken in 1976. By 1977, he had abandoned his horse. He was riding a motorcycle. So you know where it all ends. There we see a little bit of the connection that Kano had with Renaissance Europe. That's chainmail armor, which was gotten in exchange for leather, mistakenly called Moroccan leather. It wasn't Moroccan any more than it's German. But rather, it was sent to Morocco from this part of the world. And when it got to Renaissance Europe, it was exchanged for tempered steel and various kinds of armor like that. Reconstructed suit of armor there. I like this picture because it gives you a little bit of the elegance of individual riders. There's a man, if you look at his horse, he is not riding a nag. He has a sword. He looks cool in certain kinds of, he just looks with it. Well, he is the idea of the ideal. Everybody has an image of himself as being stately, astride a beautiful horse. Musician, court fool, jester, a kind of a court fool, not officially attached. He's a fool anyway. Female praise singer, an interesting woman who is wearing a man's gown, because she has kind of a man's job, but she's a woman, so she's wearing a woman's head tie. At the mosque, the parade ends, emir gives a speech, and all of these people rush their horses madly at him across the big field. They charge him with great vigor, reining up just in front of his face and saluting to him and saying, "You are the king forever, and don't let the military government forget it." Some idea of the motion and the tremendous activity. old musician, just a kind of a portrait. Other people dressed up for the parade, my neighbors. Witnesses. Ah, now we come to the place where spirits live. One of the places, that's a baobab tree. Legends say that it was, in a long time ago, it was uprooted by some force in the world and turned upside down, and that's the root system you see. The branches are in the ground. Musicians, controller of ritual. There's also a something that goes on in altered states of consciousness. You require a narrow band of concentration. Either, you know, you have to overload senses. This is the way you induce trance. You do that by lighting this light, and it brings the eyes to that point. And that, plus the rattles, which are very useful in altered states, are the kinds of things that will send people into trance, even the most unwilling. Here's a trancer down on the ground. Immobility here. The same immobility from initiation, but now he knows it so well he doesn't have to be tied. He just sits quietly. Then jumps up in the air, and he will land with on the flat of his legs and his rear end. The Bori leap. Bone jerking phenomenon. And if he does it well, he will receive gifts. But it's not he who is receiving, but rather the God or the Spirit which is on his neck. Here is a transvestite in that he is not quite a female impersonator, but he's kind of weird. Daytime. And they're having a good time. Sorry to flip to black and white. These are, most of the things that I took were black and white, and I've just done some reversals and have some slide. Here's a man, I picked this one because it shows a number of things. One of them is that they've just recently taken off the cover. This is to help him go into trance. Secondly, you get some idea of what's happening. Look at his eyes. They're disappearing into his head. The man is, he's going through elaborate physical contortions, none of which he will remember when this is over. Now, here is a person, the woman on the ground, while in trance, has suffered a relapse of an illness. It is a throat problem. She goes into spontaneous strangulation. It's kind of psychosomatic. I mean, there really is no way to explain it. It was interpreted as being a spirit which causes this kind of thing. It's a vocalist, actually, is the spirit. And this is the throat ailment is from this kind of connection. And she has suffered a relapse of this illness while in trance, and her followers, these, by the way, those people standing up, since we're looking at horses on the ground, you know what those people are called who are the attendants? They're grooms. Yeah. They're grooms, the same word for people who take care of horses. She's being attended to by the leper. Take a look at his hand. He's a leper, but he's not a leper. Psychologically, he's a leper, and he's administering.